So I'd like to thank my mother-in-law, my father-in-law, for sponsoring today's shir. Yilu Nishmas. Mayor, we'll have a few more shouts throughout the shir. Yilu Nishmas, Mayor Ben Ruy Melech, the Neshama Shnev Aliyah. So the question I wanted to discuss today is the question of Shalach Manos. Shalach Manos is a very challenging topic for women in general. It's a high-pressured time of year. And it's right around the corner from Pesach, which makes things even more aggravating and stressful. And the questions that come up with regards to Shalach Manos is one of quantity and one of quality. You know, how many Shalach Manos should you send? You don't want to insult anyone. You want to include all your friends. You want to include all your neighbors. You want to include the new people in the community, in the shul. And then the question of the quality of the Hiddur Mitzvah. Everyone wants to make their Shalach Manos so fancy and go along with the theme and with the poem and then with the costumes. So how much Hiddur Mitzvah is involved? So how many people should be getting? How much money should you spend? How much time and energy should you spend involved in Shalach Manos? And then you want to connect the theme of the Shalach Manos to the costume. So we, for example, are, you know, it's usually like private, but I don't think anyone's going to share what we're dressing up as. We're dressing up as astronauts this year. At least the kids are. Are you dressing up an astronaut? No. So the kids are dressing up as astronauts. So now you got to find some, you know, candy that matches the spaceship theme and stars and moon and sun. Now that itself is a whole other discussion about costumes. We have like meetings in the house. The kids have their meetings. They decide what they want. So my wife wants the meetings to be like Halloween time so we could buy them when they're very cheap. The kids don't know what they want to be in November, so they wait until around February to decide what they want to be. Then you have to order them Amazon, and then there's a lot of pressure going on with costumes and Shalach Manos. And the mommies just want it all to be over. They just can't wait till it's over because they have to start cleaning their for Pesach, they have to start kashering their kitchen. Now, the other question is the Purim day itself. So, you know, where are you going to go on Purim? Are you going to Shlepta Farakwa? Are you going to go to expect everyone to come to you? Are you going to split up? So I have the convenience of, you know, the greatest decision I ever made, other than marrying my wife, was becoming a rabbi. My mother-in-law might disagree with that. I still have yet to sell any hot dogs in the summer. But being a rabbi is great because that means I get to stay home for Purim. Because if I miss any of my mispalim, that's very insulting to them. So I get to stay home and be very snobby. And you come to me if you want to see me. But now my daughter is very much pushing me to go to Farakwe. So no offense to Farakwe, Chevra. But it's a distance, just like Farakwe people don't want to come to Woodmere. Woodmere people don't want to go to Farakwe. So these are decisions you have to make. So then if you split up, okay, so the wife goes out, the husband stays home, and some kids go this way, some kids go that way. So then you lose the whole theme. So if you're going to be, let's say, the chipmunks, right? Alvin, Simon, Theodore. So if two go this way and one stays home, you lose the whole theme. So it's a whole package deal. I think we had someone who was once like the seven dwarfs. So you have like three dwarfs and four dwarfs there. So everything's lost. So these are the pressures that women feel. Now, I need to mention my mother-in-law's here. I mean, speaking of high-pressure situations, so what comes to mind is just that she'll probably tell you that she will tell you the story much better than I will tell the story. But, you know, I guess I'll share maybe two stories I'll share. And she's sponsoring the shir. So once she was, you know, waiting in the bagel store online, and very patiently, a very long line. My mother's very patient. And then the line's moving, and she finally gets to the register. And a lady runs in. There's a long line. A lady runs in. And she says to my mother-in-law, "Can I just cut in front of you? I double parked outside on Central Avenue." So these are the pressures people feel. You're waiting online, you're so patient, then you have some lady come in, thinks she owns the world, and cuts the line. Or another high-pressure situation, my mother was once driving very nicely. She has a lot of situations with driving and parking. So once in a Gourmet Glot parking lot, she's going the right way, and then there's another car going the wrong direction in Gourmet Glot parking lot, which I imagine you all experience different events in parking lots there. So she's going the right direction, and there's a big SUV coming right at her. And they start honking at each other. So now, the lady in the SUV is going the wrong direction, is expecting my mother to back up. And it gets into a whole thing, and my mother thought, "I hope this is not embarrassing you at all." So, they get into a whole thing, and the lady in the SUV says, "Could you back up?" I said, "Me? But I should back up. I'm going the right direction. You're going the wrong direction. You should back up." "I don't back up." "What do you mean you don't back up?" "I don't back up. But you're going the wrong direction." So these are like high pressure situations. Would I imagine Pesach and Purim? Is that like bumper to bumper in Gourmet Glot parking lots? So the question becomes, what are our obligations as women? How much should we put into Shalach Manos? How much energy, how much time, how much money? Of course, Hiddur Mitzvah is very important. Of course, Chinuch Habanim is very important. And of course, fulfilling the mitzvah is very, very important. So, women, of course, are chayiv in the mitzvah of Shalach Manos. That's number one. They are chayiv. We have a concept called Af Hein Ayu Be'os Ares. Women were involved in the miracle just as the men were involved in the miracle of Purim. As we know that Esther was very much orchestrating the whole nace that took place. She was at the forefront in the palace taking care of the miracle of Purim. So Af Hein Ayu Be'os Ares, that women were involved in the miracle, clearly dictates that women have to fulfill the mitzvah of Shalach Manos. That women cannot send to men, and men can't send to women, so women have to send to their gender. If they're single, they send to women, and if they're married, so as a family. The mother and father and the children all send as a unit. So not every wife who's married has to send to her friend. The husband and wife as a unit could send, we're sending a family Shalach Manos to the neighbor down the block, to the friend who lives in Woodmere, to the friend who lives in Farakwa. And how many Shalach Manos does one have to send? So we learned this when we were younger in elementary school, that the Torah tells us, the Megillah tells us, that you have to send Shalach Manos ish lirei'ehu, u'mishloach Manos ish lirei'ehu. Mishloach means to send. There is an opinion, everything we do in Yiddishkeit, there's always a source, there's always a minhag. So oftentimes the parents aren't the ones who are delivering the Shalach Manos. You send your kids when they're old enough to go deliver the Shalach Manos. And that's based on the word Mishloach. Mishloach means to send a messenger. Not that you send it, but you send a messenger. It's actually brought down in Halacha that there are those who are makbid to dafka send using a shliach, not to send on your own. So there's such a concept to send your kids to deliver Shalach Manos for you. And how many do you give? So the Pasuk says, Ish l're'ehu, just one. All you have to give is just one package of Shalach Manos, and you have fulfilled your mitzvah. Nothing more than that. It's very, very simple. I'm not sure why women and even men got so crazy about Shalach Manos. Now, there's a good reason to do it. The Shulchan Aruch says, the more, the better. Harei zeh meshubach, the more you send. We want to instill friendships. We want to build relationships. This is all very important. But if it's up against your sanity, so then I wouldn't tell you to do this. We oftentimes have an halacha where there's a clash between different concepts. There's the mitzvah, and then there's the hiddur mitzvah, and then there's your sanity. I'll give you an example where the Torah describes different concepts of clashes. Shalom bayis is a great example of this. What happens when halacha goes in the face against shalom bayis? There's a machlokas, there's a debate between a husband and wife. There's some tension between the two. So it's a strange thing to say. I wouldn't recommend anyone doing this. But there is a Gemara that says, for the purpose of Shalom Bayis, you're actually allowed to lie. There are four instances you're allowed to lie in general. One is about a relationship with a husband and wife. Second thing is about if you learned a Masechta, you could say, I didn't learn it, so people don't ask me questions. If you stayed at a nice person's house, you don't have to say that the accommodations were so great, because if you say, oh, that guy was such a great host, or that girl was such a great host, everyone's going to want to stay at their house, and they won't be able to handle it. It's overwhelming. So these are three areas you could lie about relationships, about what you've learned, and about where you've stayed. But there's a fourth case, the Gemara says. When it comes to shalom bayis, you're allowed to lie as well. What does that mean? So Avram and Sarah, we know they couldn't have children. And Sarah says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Sarah, my husband's too old to have a child. So Hashem comes back to Avram. Hashem says to Avram, why did Sarah say that Sarah was too old? And the Gemara says, Sarah didn't say that. Sarah said that Avram was too old, not Sarah. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu reported to Avram, HaKadosh Baruch Hu lied. He said that Sarah was complaining that Sarah herself was too old, but she wasn't saying that. She said that Avram was too old. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want to create any shalom bayis there. So he changed what was said. So for Shalom Bayis, you're allowed to lie. So listen to the following shaila. There's a guy learning in Yerushalayim in Kollel. His wife wasn't the best cook. And every single day, she made lunch for him. He didn't really like it. And one time, he had enough. He said, I want a nice meal for lunch today. So after Seder, he's going home. He stops off to get some shawarma. He has a nice piece of shawarma. He's full. He'll tell his wife he's not so hungry when he gets home. He gets home, and the wife decided to put in, she went all out this day for lunch. Prepared a beautiful spread of milchiks. Lasagna, and I don't know, cheesecake, whatever else it was. Now the problem was, he's fleishiks now. And he didn't want to insult his wife. So this guy was a Talmid Chacham. He knew the Gemara in Yevamos. The Gemara says that for Shalom Bayis, you're allowed to go against Halacha. So he thought, maybe I should be able to eat the milchik's food so I don't insult my wife. Even though it hasn't been 6 hours since he last ate the fleishiks. So Rav Zilberstein said, no, you can't violate Halacha for Shalom Bayis. What you could do for Halacha, what you could have said was a lie. You could have said that you stopped off at a Pidyon HaBen on the way home, and you wanted to partake in the Suda, and there was a Fleishik Suda, that's why you're Fleishik now. But to violate an Aveir like Basar B'Chalav, that's not allowed. But we see from this a fascinating clash between two different concepts. I'm not recommending anyone lie, ever. I spoke yesterday about everyone, I spoke on Shabbos about the Houston Astros. Apparently a lot of the women on the other side don't know about the Houston Astros. For those who don't know, the Houston Astros were stealing signs of the other team to know what pitch was coming in. And so I gave a shiur yesterday to the men, what halacha would say about the Houston Astros. By the way, it works for those who don't know. The catcher makes some signs, should it be a fastball, should it be a changeup, should it be a curveball. And the batter has no idea what pitch is coming. But the Astros use some technology to be able to tell them, they were able to read the signs and tell the batter what pitch was coming. So you knew if it was a fastball or if it was a curveball. Does it mean anything to the ladies? Different pitches? And whatever, a slow ball, a fastball, a high, whatever, moves. So they were able to know what pitch was coming and they won the World Series. And they were caught doing this. So did they violate any halacha? And the most basic thing that they violated was that they lied. They cheated. So I'm not recommending anyone ever, ever lie. I'm just giving this as an example. That when you see a clash between two different halachas, we have to make decisions. Shalach Manos, you want to perform the mitzvah. You want to do Hiddur mitzvah. But if it's going to affect your sanity, if you're not going to enjoy Purim, if you're going to be upset at your kids and stressed, that's not going to be an enjoyable Purim. So I'm not saying a person shouldn't make the Shalach Manos nice. You should. If you have the ability, you definitely should. Hiddur mitzvah is an important concept. But you have to weigh out the different possibilities. Know what you have to do, and then know what you can do. So the bare minimum is just to send one shalach manos to someone else, and you've fulfilled your mitzvah. Beyond that is all added. And it's important, but you have to make decisions. Now, yes, people will be insulted. You have friends who will be insulted. Rav Asher Weiss, the past 3 years, we had a nice conference in the Yungas at Woodmere with a number of rabbanim. And he gives us some chizik to the rabbis, and he gives some guidance, and halacha guidance, and hashkafa guidance. So one of the things he had said the first conference was, as a rabbi, and as a rebbetzin, you can never be insulted. You can't keep a list who sent you shalach manos and who didn't send you shalach manos. If you're going to live like that and be a rabbi like that, you're not going to be successful. Because everyone has their own cheshbon. It's not that they don't like the rabbi. They have a whole list of people they have to give to their parents and to their in-laws and then to their friends and their neighbors. And the kids have to go around. If you're trying to keep a list of who sent to you and who didn't send to you, you're not going to be besimcha. So all you have to do and all your friend has to do is just send to one person. So what are you supposed to send? So the Torah says, the Megillah says, manos. You send two gifts. How do you define two gifts? Now, this is one of the biggest misconceptions, probably, in all of halacha. There are many misconceptions people have about halacha. So one misconception is people think you're allowed to use any utensil once without tovling it first. You buy a new pan, I get one free use, one free pass, and then I could tovel it. That is completely incorrect. If you have metal, if you have a glass, anything of that sort, you must Tovlet before any youth. There's no one free pass for Tovlet and Kalim. It doesn't work like that. You can't kill a person just once and be off the hook. So there's no one-time free pass. Another misconception is people, Tefillas Kalim, people think that, oh, you know what? I don't have time to go to the mikvah, but I could actually line my pot in like paper, aluminum foil, and that will also get around Tefillas Kalim. That, too, is a misconception. If you have a utensil, a vessel that requires tefillah, covering it, lining it will not help. So I believe probably the biggest misconception is, I don't know where it came from, is that you know which two manos, which two types of pieces of food you need for shalach manos? Two different brachas, right? I need a mezonos and a shahakol, or a adama and a ha'etz. Now, everyone who thinks that way, don't feel bad, because everyone actually thinks that. So don't feel bad. The truth is you don't need to do that. It has to be two manos that are different from each other, but not different brachos. And the proof is, the Shulchan Aruch gives you an example of what's considered two manos. So the Shulchan Aruch says, two different pieces of meat. What bracha do you say on, I don't know, rib steak, shakal? What bracha do you say on, I don't know, French roast, shakal? Chicken, shakal? They're all the same bracha. And yet the Shulchan Aruch says it's enough if they're two pieces of meat, you fulfilled the mitzvah of shalach manos. So how do you define two pieces of meat, though? Let's say I have got a rib roast, and I cut two slices. Now, they're two pieces. Would that be considered shnei manos, two different pieces? And the answer is the two manos have to be different from each other, different in taste, different in type. So let's say I've got two rib steaks. One I'm making, I don't know, with a barbecue sauce, one I'm putting in some seasoning, or one I'm boiling in water. I don't know if you could do that with a rib steak, but one you boil, or you put the sous vide, and then one you grill on the outside in the barbecue. If they taste differently, if they're cooked differently, that would qualify as two different manos. Or let's say Laffy Taffies. So yellow, anyone like yellow taffies? The banana, I don't like them. We don't like them. Who? My mom likes the yellow taffies. Okay. So she might be the only one that I know. But you have a yellow taffy and you have a blue taffy. Those taste differently. That's considered shnei manos. You could give two Laffy Taffies and you fulfilled your mitzvah. Well, not really. Because the shalach manos, the whole point of shalach manos is to help your friend with a meal. So it has to be something that's more meal type. Laffy Taffies don't really cut it. It should be something more significant. I'm not telling you what to put in, but challah certainly is very meal type. I don't think you should pack meat, but you can if you have the money and refrigeration to send it in such a way. But there has to be two different manos that are fit for a suda, that's fit for a meal. They have to be cooked. They have to be edible. You know, sometimes people will send coffee beans. They have a whole, I don't know, Starbucks team, right? Everyone's wearing Starbucks uniforms, so everything Starbucks this, Starbucks that. But they're not going to send you necessarily coffee unless they have the glass jars that are closed. But they send coffee beans. Coffee beans will not qualify because it's raw. It has to be something that's in the edible state. Has to be something also that, as I said, for the suda itself. Sending ketchup or mustard, I don't know, you're selling hot dogs, let's say. You have a whole baseball theme. So you want to be the hot dog guy selling. So you give a hot dog and you give mustard. Mustard does not count as one of the manos. It has to be something that's really part of the food, the meal itself. Spices or ketchup or mustard or mayonnaise would not qualify for the manos necessary. It has to be, again, something significant for the actual meal. So these are two manos. I'm going to go on a bit of a tangent for a second, though. Two manos, defining two manos, two different types of foods, is very relevant not only for shalach manos, but it's also very relevant for the halachas of borer. I'm just going to not focus too much. What's borer? Borer is one of the hardest melachas on Shabbos to grasp. It's very, very confusing how to define it. What's borer? When you have a mixture of two different items or more, you can't separate the two of them. So let's say I've got a platter of chicken. I've got dark meat and white meat. If they're mixed together, if I were to separate the white meat and the dark meat, that would actually be considered borer. Because shnei manos, the definition of shnei manos are, if they're two different flavors, even though they're both chicken, even though they're both meat, since they both taste it differently, they would be a problem of borer. You can't separate two different things if it's part of a mixture. The one of the big questions borer come up, you know, most people have filters on their sink. People don't want to drink the water from the tap, so they put a filter. We have a filter in our sink. Are you allowed to use a filter on Shabbos? Could you take the water out from the filter on Shabbos? Isn't that borer? Because there's some dirt, it's holding back, it's filtering through something. Won't that be a problem of borer? And the answer is that you are allowed to use that filter on Shabbos so long as you'd be willing to have the tap water once in a while. What does that mean? If you drink from the tap water, that means you don't have to have from the filtered water. You choose to. So that's not called borer. If I, let's say, apples and oranges, I like both apples and oranges. So if I take oranges out of the apples, that's not borer because I like both of them. When you like both of them, that's not called borer. So if I'm willing to drink from the tap, and then sometimes I like it from the filter, that would not be a violation of filter. But if you're so makpid that you would only drink from the filter, then you couldn't take that out, actually, on Shabbos. You couldn't use that filter on Shabbos. People in Farakwe, I'm not passing for Farakwe, but those who live in Farakwe have problems of the New York City water in terms of the bugs. And many poskim say you must use a filter even during the week because there are bugs in the New York City water. So you wouldn't be allowed to drink from the tap halachically. According to those poskim, you would not be able to use the filter on Shabbos because you would only drink from the filter. You need the bugs removed from it. That would be borer. So when we were living in the Heights, we actually used to fill up a lot of pitchers of water before Shabbos because we couldn't use the filter on Shabbos. I don't know if you remember this. It goes back a number of years ago, but that's something to keep in mind. But for the lachas of borer, it has to be two different types of food, two different types of items in order to get around the problem of borer. You know, one of the cases, just one last thing on borer before we go back to Shalach Manos. Oftentimes you have a whole mixture of silverware and you want to separate it. You want to, you know, set the table, let's say, for example. But if there's a mixture of forks and knives and spoons, you can't take out the knives here and the spoons there, the forks there. So one of the recommendations are you take the silver and you just kind of throw it throughout the table and everything's separate. Because doing that, borer is only relevant if there's a mixture. If there's no mixture, that's not borer. If I want to separate my Gemara and the tissues, it's not a problem. They're not mixed together. Only if they're mixed together, the whole bunch of things would be a problem of borer. So once you've just taken the silver and spread them throughout, so then that's no longer considered a mixture. So now back to Shalach Manos for a second. So we need two manos, and they don't have to be two brachas, just two different types. Food, and you could also even use drinks. Drinks will qualify. Baruch Hashem, we get a nice amount of wine. It lasts us for like 6 months of the year. So wine's always a nice thing to give. Wine certainly qualifies as one of the manos. Water does not qualify. So if you give water and challah, you have not fulfilled the mitzvah of Shalach Manos. Has to be something that's considered a considerable drink. Apple juice, coffee, orange juice would qualify. Water would not. What about flavored seltzer? Would that qualify as one of the manos? So Rav Yashav felt that seltzer is just water with a little bit of bubbles and maybe a little bit of flavor. Rav Yashav felt that seltzer does not qualify as one of the manos. Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky felt it did, but it seems that most paskin that one should not rely on seltzer as one of the shnei manos that one needs to fulfill the mitzvah. Now, one thing people don't keep in mind is the different sensitivities of people's level of kashrus. So firstly, it has to be kosher. I don't need to tell you it needs to be kosher. You have to check the symbols, that the symbols are something that people accept. But it also has to be, OUD, for example. Not everyone keeps Chalav Yisrael. Some people do, some people don't. That's something always to keep in mind. If you send a bunch of packages and there's some M&Ms in it, it would be sensitive to make sure to see who you're sending it to. That's very, very important. Now, when buying wine, obviously we're spending a lot of money on Shalach Manos. So sometimes you find a nice bottle that's very, very cheap. So when it's cheap wine, sometimes it could be an issue of Shemitah wine, which means it was wine that was made during the Shemitah year. And there are halachas, which I'm not going to go through now, which has to be kept when you have wine from the Shemitah year. So what I'm saying is just be very, very careful when you buy certain things that you're sensitive to the kashrus, the sensitive to the food that's being included, to whom you're actually sending it to.
It would say Shemitah wine on it?
It would say Shemitah. If you look in the back, again, if you see a nice bottle of wine and it's cheap, I would suggest looking in the back to see, it might tell you it's a Shemitah year, or it'd say Belichashash Shemitah, no concern of Shemitah. It's important to look for that when you're buying bottles of wine. It's not that common, but it has come up. And then when it comes up, the basic idea is you can't throw out a bottle of Shemitah wine. You have to finish every last drop, which is not such a big deal, but you just have to be aware of it not to get rid of it because you can't throw out Shemitah wine. So this pretty much covers the halachas of shalach manos. Shnei manos, two different types of food, it could be a drink and a food, does not have to be two different brachas. Now, one of the areas that people don't focus on, I don't believe, as much as they should in Purim, is the mitzvah of matanos levyonim. The Rambam says matanos levyonim is actually more important than shalach manos. Giving tzedakah to those who need is more important than shalach manos to your friends. And women are also obligated in the mitzvah of tzedakah. And the truth is that in general, women don't have to do tzedakah because if they're married, if they're not married, they have to give their own tzedakah. If they are married, so then they're fulfilling their mitzvah through their husbands. There's actually a fascinating discussion in the Shulchan Aruch that women do not have the right, actually, if they're married, to give tzedakah. It's not their money. The Gemara says, Masha kana isha, kana baila. Whatever money a woman acquires, by definition, the husband acquires it. So you have no money here. You might make a lot of money, you might be a millionaire, but you're not really a millionaire. Your husbands have all the rights to that money. Masha kana isha, kana baila. But the poskim say if the husband gives the license and permission for the women to use the money, then they would be able to use the money. So I believe it's safe to say that women have access to the credit card much more than men do. So even though men, more often than not, are making the money, the women are the ones using the money, and therefore women do have the right to give out tzedakah. But there was a time in history where if a man came to the door looking for money, for tzedakah, the wife would say, I don't have the right to give you money. But nowadays that has changed, and women have a lot more rights in general, but certainly in the area of tzedakah, and that's why they should be more makbid on matanos levyonim as well, in addition to shalach manos. So if you're spending, I don't know, $500 on shalach manos, you should spend maybe $600 on matanos levyonim. More money should be spent for those who need it than those who don't need it. Ramoshe Feinstein actually writes that he was asked many, many questions in his life, many questions of all areas of the Torah. One area where he felt he wasn't asked enough questions was the halachas of tzedakah. He didn't sense people were doing it as much or they weren't careful as much. There are a lot of halachas. People don't ask questions about tzedakah so much. Who should you be giving to first? Should it be someone in your city? Should it be a relative? Money used for tuition, for boys' school, girls' school? These are a lot of questions, and there are a lot of details that need to be understood that people actually don't ask enough questions. And in the end of the day, the whole mitzvah of Purim, the whole idea of Purim and Shalach Manos is in order to engender relationships and friendships to family and to friends and to neighbors and new people. So something to keep in mind is that you don't want to insult anyone, obviously, but you also want to use this as an opportunity to build new relationships with people who moved in, or people who maybe you haven't gotten along with recently, or people who you've never even met. So I just heard on Shabbos an incredible ma'isa. And I'll use this as a challenge for each one of you to maybe use this as an opportunity to give shalach manos to someone who you've never spoken to before, or someone who you never gave before, or someone who you've gotten into a fight with. So there's a guy in the shul who moved in a few months ago, and he made it his thing that whenever a soldier in Eretz Yisrael gets killed, he sets up a whole learning program of Mishnayos. And where he does is where he sets up shop and does this in a shul in the five towns Far Rockaway area. So there was a Satmar Chassid who always makes fun of him. You're learning for the Chayalim who got killed. So a few months ago, the people had been killed. And he set up a whole big seam of learning Mishnayos. And the Chassid walks in and he says, some soldiers died again? And he said, yeah. So where are the soldiers from? He said, a couple of soldiers in Jersey City. The Chassidim who were killed in Jersey City. That's what we're learning for. So Satmar Chassid was impressed. So he took a look at the names, and it turned out, if I remember correctly, because there was a lot of information on Shabbos at the Kiddush, I think I'm remembering all the details. So this chassid says, that guy actually who you're learning for, the machatanim of ours, this chassid, that you're learning for that guy, that's pretty impressive. So the machatanim called up the one sitting shiva, the one who lost his son, one of them, that there's a guy learning for you in Far Rockaway, in five towns, who doesn't even know who you are, and he's learning, Lila Nishmas, your son. So this father, and the one who, the father of the killed individual in Borough Park, calls up this guy who lives in the neighborhood now. He says, thank you so much for learning from my son. You don't even know who he is. And he says, I want to share a story with you. So the man who lost his son shared the following story with this individual. He said, when I was sitting Shiva, I got a call from someone. And I answered the phone and I said, hello, hi, I'm calling from Brazil. He says, do I know you? He says, no, I don't know you. But this is, if someone gets killed, I'll kiss Hashem. I want to be Menachem Avel as best as I could. So he called him from Brazil to wish him Nichma Velum. So then the father who's sitting Shiva says, wait a second. Have you ever been to Borough Park before? He says, yeah, 20 years ago, once 20 years ago. He said, were you looking for a place to go for Shabbos? He says, yeah. He says, did you go over to the Gabbai? He says, yeah, I went over to the Gabbai. And did you go to the Gabbai's house? Yeah, I went to that Gabbai's house. He says, did that Gabbai not have a beard? Usually Hasidim have beards. So the Gabbai, who happens to be the father who was sitting Shiva, didn't have a beard. He had some illness or whatever that he couldn't grow a beard. So he says, I'm the Gabbai. You came to my house for Shabbos 20 years ago. So this chesed he had done, he called him not knowing who he's calling, just to show a chesed for someone he doesn't even know. And the same person in this community who's setting up a chesed to learn Mishnah, Le'ilah Nishmas, those people who get killed, that's the utmost chesed. That's a chesed shel emes. Chesed shel emes is typically when you bury someone who doesn't know what you're doing. But to a chesed shel emes in the world of the living, to do a chesed who doesn't, you don't even know who they are, that's the greatest accomplishment. To send to your friends, okay, fine. You tell your neighbor this year, I'm not going to send you. I love you so much. We're great friends. I want to focus on someone who I don't know. That's a nice challenge. But to add a little bit more to that, try sending to someone who maybe you've gotten into a fight with recently, or you've sensed some tension or some distance. That's an even greater challenge. Try that. You know, one of the big themes of Purim is a concept of shtika, silence. Moshe Rabbeinu was in the Mitzrayim, and he was saw Dasan Vavirim fighting. He says, would you guys stop fighting? And they said to him, are you going to kill us like you killed the Mitzri? And Moshe understood that he needed to run away. They knew that he had killed the Mitzri, his life is in danger. He ran away. Rashi says there that now he knew. Says, no dehadavar. Now it became clear, Rashi says, that they don't know how to keep secrets. Everyone knew that, all the Jews knew that Moshe had killed the Mitzri, but they didn't know how to keep secrets. The Maharal says, if you don't know how to keep a secret, that means you're not worthy of the redemption. So Moshe ran away knowing they couldn't keep a secret. What's the concept of keeping secrets? So what happened when Ahasuerus tried pushing Esther to find out where she came from? Tell me, which nation are you from? Where do you come from? And what did she say? Ein Esther Magedes Molarata. She refused. She refused to tell Ahasuerus where she came from. She stayed silent. Now, this is very hard for women, I know, in general. Everything is found in Chazal. The Gemara says that women took 90% of speech in this world. They speak a lot. That's the nature of women. That's just how they are. The God created women with 90% speech to 10% men. That is a very hard thing to keep, to stay silent. In fact, everything's in Chazal. Just another idea. I always found it funny that women go in droves to the bathroom. They go in groups. And it's based on the Gemara. The Gemara says, because it used to be that the bathrooms were very far away from society. It was dangerous there. So the Gemara says they should go in groups to stay safe, and they should talk. So people think that a lot of people are there and keep the evil people away. So such a concept exists, women going in droves to the bathroom and talking and talking and talking. So to stay silent is no small order for a woman. So the Gemara says, how did Esther know to keep silent? How did she learn this trait that she shouldn't tell Ahasuerus where she came from? So the Gemara says, well, she learned this from her great-grandfather, Shaul, who learned it from Rachel Imenu. And the Gemara goes through the whole story, that what happened to Rachel Imenu? That when she gave the simanim, she gave the signs over to her sister Leah, she didn't say a word. She stayed silent. She could have told Yaakov, She stayed silent. And she passed on that midah further to Shaul. Now, watch this. When Shaul was appointed king, so if you were appointed queen, who would be the first person you would tell? Your mother. So Shaul didn't tell his parents. Well, boys are different than girls. So I used to not tell my parents when I got scores back, not because I did bad. I just didn't tell my parents what scores I got. That's just how I was. So Shaul didn't tell his parents that he was appointed king. The pasuk says that when Shaul was appointed king, v'zdivar hamlucha lo higilo. He got home, had dinner with his parents, and then went to sleep. So he had this midah of tznius, the midah of shtika, the midah of staying silent. And that midah eventually was passed on to Esther and Malchus. So it's really the secrets, the ability to stay silent, that brings about the ultimate geula. So when a person gets into a fight, the best approach is shtika. The best approach is just stay silent. Don't fight. But there is one level above that. I know Rabbi Shai Shechter shared a story that I told him last week, so I'm going to share a story that he told me a different occasion. Rabbi Yashuv was once coming back. He used to work on the Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael. And there were a number of Haredim who were not very happy because when you work for the Beis Din of Israel, you get paid by the Israeli government. So there are some individuals, you're taking a paycheck from the Israeli government. Rabbi Yashuv, you're nothing. So there are some people who have chutzpah and don't understand reality. So Rabbi Yashuv was coming back from work one day. He was coming back from working in the Beis Din. And in the street, this man, who was very against Rabbi Yashuv for doing this, takes three eggs and pelts Rabbi Yashuv with three eggs, and there are the shells and eggs dripping down his coat. Rabbi Yashuv, who is very familiar with the Gemara, knows that a Talmud Chacham should not walk in the street if you're dirty. So he stopped in his tracks with patience and calmness, takes out a handkerchief and begins to clean off the eggs and the eggshells, and he wouldn't move until he was clean. And the man who threw the eggs was standing there just watching Rabbi Yashuv in this bizyonos, disgracefully just dripping in eggs. And Rabbi Yashuv just took his time and cleaned. And afterwards, now, imagine what you would have done, or maybe what your husband or father would have done in this case. Maybe he would have attacked the guy, maybe he would have screamed at the guy. Maybe you would have just walked away as nothing happened. Rabbi Yashuv took the high road. He took a whole other approach. Rabbi Yashuv said he understood that this man, obviously, was a little bit too bored and too much time in his hands that he had to throw eggs at Rabbi Yashuv. He needed to be busy with something. Rabbi Yashuv gave him a bracha that I give you a bracha that you should be too busy to ever do this again. Now, this man had been married for many, many years without having children. The next year, his wife gave birth to triplets. Three eggs led to triplets. The high road is when you're in a machlokas to give a gift, to give a bracha, to give shalach manos. Silence is one level that leads to redemption, but giving a gift in shalach manos is even the highest level of creating friendships and redemption and gula. So just like Moshe Rabbeinu, that silence was the key to the gulas Mitzrayim, so too in the times of Esther and Mordechai. And the Chazal tell us that the mother's going to give birth to the Mashiach, give birth to the Gula. The mother aim is Aleph Mem. Aleph Mem, each generation we have mothers who are leading us as heroes. In the times of Mitzrayim, Aleph Mem was Aaron and Moshe and Miriam, Aleph and Mem. The times of Purim, it was Esther and Mordechai, Aleph and Mem. And in the future, it's going to be Eliyahu and Mashiach, the Aleph Mem. So it's really the zechus that all the ladies do, their involvement in the mitzvahs and the chinuch in the house, as mothers, as wives, the silence, the tznius, the shtika that they keep, and the gifts that they give in order to create friendships, to build relationships, that's what's going to lead to the gula shleima ba'amitas, mehir v'yameinu, amen v'yameinu.